So what did you do before you came here?
For a while I was going to be an artificial intelligence researcher. I made it to grad school and did one semester there. And it was like, just not valuable. They're doing...
University of Chicago or what?
No, I was going to grad school at Arizona State University.
Arizona State. I didn't know that they have an AI department.
Yeah, they have an engineering department. I mean, AI is still new enough that it doesn't usually have its own, you know, even like its own degree or anything. It's computer science, but they have
a robotics?
They have what's called the Complex Systems Institute. So basically, I was interested in like biological, like genetic algorithms is basically what you could call it. But applying those to artificial intelligence. Kind of quickly got disenchanted with all that.
I just read that they just announced a level 5 of GMP, yeah? Mm-hmm. Artificial intelligence. When I started University of Cincinnati, they had a robotic thing in 82. They just started, I'm in KE. No, artificial intelligence. 82. When you went on a conference, you know, I presented your papers. Yeah? I mean, you saw a group of 300 people from all over the world who were interested in artificial intelligence. Now everybody does it. Yeah? At that time, it was really interesting. Yeah? I mean, the people, you know, the people were also interested, very interested. from all over the world. But now what they do is that. So you came here to practice? You have practiced before?
Yes, after kind of having just another existential crisis of like, I don't want to do this AI thing, this is not valuable, what am I doing with my life? And I kind of got desperate and struggled to maybe put away some anti-religious prejudice and looking into Buddhism and the book like the Ajahn Mun's Path of Practice that mm-hmm. was like, wow, okay, this is, they're really doing it. This is the real deal. This is exploring the Buddhist world is very confusing. You know, there's all kinds of, you know, what I would now call counterfeit Dharma. That book just struck me. Okay, this is really authentic. Like, mm-hmm. they're doing what the Buddha said to do.
It's a line of the Lord Buddha, and if Ajahn Mun wasn't sure, you know, it was done at the same way as the Lord Buddha. He went back, you know, and asked the Arahants of the Lord Buddha, you know, how is it done? Yeah. If he wasn't sure. He wanted to make sure that, you know, everything is done in the same manner, in the same fashion as the Lord Buddha. Even ask, you know, do we have to sit, you know, with three ropes, you know, and then we do samadhi? No. how does one die, you know, when one walks chankrum, you know, and then the Arahant showed him how they died, yeah? When they walked chankrum, how they died, you know, when they were sitting in samadhi. Yeah, it's a real thing, yeah. But you will find very, very few, you know, who still, you know, are on his line, yeah?
Yeah.
Lungdam Mahabho probably was the last one, you know, who was full in line with this Mumpumat's teaching. Anyway.
When you met Ajahn Mahabho, did you have any doubt whether this was a fully liberated person?
No, when I saw him in the morning, yeah. I mean, it was very interesting, yeah. I came, you know, I saw Ajahn Panya, he was the Western disciple of Lungdam Mahabho. I mean, he stayed with him for 40 years, yeah.
He was the man, he had a, like, bum leg, one leg with no...
No, no, not leg, you know, I mean just ankle.
Oh, okay.
And then I saw him, you know, in the morning when he was, you know, having his meal, you know, and then after meal, you know, he got his smoke, you know, and then he read his newspaper, and then, and I saw him, and then I said, you know, this is my father, this is my mother, this is my place, eh? And I never deviated within the 15 years I stayed with him.
That's when you, this was the time Mahabua,
yeah.
Having a smoke and reading the paper?
Yeah.
Okay.
Every day, you know, I mean, he had his style, you know. And when he read the paper, and then he saw somebody was in dire strait, you know, and then he went into his car, you know, and picked up some money, you know, and then didn't help these people. No, I never had any doubt. Yeah? I mean, I hardly had any doubt when I read his first book, you know, Straight from the Heart, yeah. When I read his book, I need to see this man. Yeah? He is the one, he knows the answers to all the questions that I have. And then when I saw him, it was all clear, yeah. Because he was nothing, you know, I mean, I've been in the West for 7 years, you know, I had so many teachers from America, from France, you know, from England, you know, yeah. Everyone, yeah, I mean, I was disillusioned, yeah. Also from Germany, you know, two good teachers, you know, they were not bad teachers, but, you know, I mean, they didn't know, yeah. They had all big egos. I'm the grandpa. Or I'm a lucky or something like that. So submit. And when you saw Lungta Mahabua, yeah, if he wasn't on stage, you didn't even notice him. He was not there. Yeah.
Empty.
Huh?
Empty.
Empty. Yeah, he was an empty shell, yeah.
Nothing.
But the moment, the occasion, when there was a need for him to be there, he was there. I mean, so fully present, you know, I mean, it was amazing. Yeah? And then the moment he was not needed, poops, gone. Yeah. Really amazing.
Did you feel a compassionate vibe from him, a compassionate, loving energy?
Yes, but, yeah, I mean, but it takes a while. Yeah? Because what we think is compassion, yeah? When we come, you know, and to see, yeah, he must be compassionate, yeah. I mean, and then he scolds you, then he hits you, you know, and he asks you, does it hurt, you know, yeah. And only in the later steps, you know, you understand that this is his compassion to show you, you know, to show you where you go wrong, yeah. And in the beginning, especially when we come from the West, we don't understand this compassion. Only then, later, yes. I mean, it took me a few years, you know, to understand. And then I realized, you know, he only took care of a few months, yeah. He was only on the step, you know. I mean, he said, yeah, when people asked him, yeah, all these months are good, he said, no. Not all the monks are good here in the monastery. There are bad monks and there are good monks. And he took normally care of the good monks, you know, I mean, try to develop them. So, I mean, he was on their toes, yeah? Yeah? I was always wondering, I did something, you know, like the other monks, you know, and then he came and scolded me. Why doesn't he scold the others? Yeah? Why does he only scold me? Yeah? And that was his compassion, you know? Because you saw the other ones, you know, I mean, it's useless to scold them, and because just we waited, yeah?
Did he ever offer encouraging words? Like,
of course, yes. But only at a certain time, yeah? At a certain time, he started to smile, yeah? Huh? When you came to see him and asked questions, you know, then he answered, you know, and then he asked, and then you saw his compassion.
When you were when you're talking about some good monks and some not that good monks, that's reminding a question like we practice sometimes we can be in the doubts about are we practicing correctly or not enough or too much, or we put too much effort, the wrong effort. And sometimes how to judge that, to lead back to good practice.
It's actually very easy. When you practice, I mean, the first thing, of course, you know, do I keep within my 5 precepts? Yes, okay. It's not, then you're already on the good side, About practice, Am I with my Buddha or am I with my object of investigation? Then you're on the right side. No matter what it is, Very simple, But we never ask these questions, You always doubt, is my Buddha wrong? No. As long as you're with the Buddha, you know, no matter how the Buddha is, it is all correct, Or the breath, However the breath is, it is correct as long as you are observant of the breath, But we try, I mean, we are all from the West, and we try to manipulate, And that is where it goes wrong, We want the breath to be calm, but it's not fast, Or we want the Buddha to be fast or slow, you know, or deep or shallow or whatever, And it is not, If we are observing the Buddha, or if we are observing the breath, or observing, you know, the object of investigation, then our practice is correct, No matter how the object of observation is. And that is what gives us the problems and doubt, Oh, it should be like this. No, it should not be like this. It should be, It is the way it is, To know how the things that we observe are. That's when we are on the right path. And that's very easy. You just ask yourself, do I know how the Buddha is? Okay, then I'm on the right path. But the doubt always creeps in, The Buddha is now this, the Buddha is now this, or the breath is now this, or the breath is now that. It doesn't really matter, That's why I give the people who are here in the monastery, observe the animals. That's how you observe the breath or the Buddha. You cannot control the animal. But you know what they are doing every moment when you observe them. They're climbing up, or they're you know, finding food, or you know, building a nest, or whatever. You know what they are doing. And this kind of knowing is that what we need to develop when we observe the breath. But when we observe the breath, we try to manipulate it. And that's where it goes from. So ask the question when you do practice, do I know what is going on? Then you're on the right path. And don't judge, And that is very difficult. I know, it's very difficult. It should be like this, it should be like this.
Once it's been like a kind of the main topic of like conflict that I've noticed within meditation, kind of different ways of like practice, basically the theory of practice of like, you know, there's like mindfulness and just like being broadly aware, and then there's like, you know, other teachers that are just like super like just get really into like your absolute minuscule, like your nostril, like get the absolute, you know, tiniest sensations and really focus, and those seem to be like just diametrically, you know.
It seems to be, Because some people understand, and people, it is mostly Westerners, They misunderstand, or mistranslate sati as being mindful. Mindful is being, your mind is full of one thing, And that is not sati. Sati is mind emptiness. But the concentration is on the object. Because concentration and sati are not the same thing. You concentrate on the object and you are aware of what is going on with this object. That is sati. And it will split, in the times, when you meditate, it will split. The concentration is around the tip of the nose or with the Buddha, but the knowing falls to the heart where it comes from. So sati is the knowingness, is the awareness. And the awareness can be very detailed, but it can be also broad. I mean, the more aware you are of one of the things, it includes also the awareness of your surroundings. And that's, you know, people mix it up. You know, they don't understand what is going on. Oh, no, I should be only focused on this. Yeah? But the more you are aware, the more you are aware of everything. Yeah? Because awareness is not, it's just not focused on one thing. Yeah, that is concentration, that is just focused on one thing. Yeah? But awareness is aware of everything what is going on. It can be awareness of the whole universe. So if you understand, yeah, and it took me a long time, you know, and without the help of Lungda Mahapur, I would have never understood it. After a few years I was there, you know, one time in the morning he always gave a talk, yeah. And then he told the lay people, yeah, you understand, sati, when there is sati, there are no kilesam. Huh? And if you are mindful, there are still the kilesas that try to, you know, to put, you know, to, yeah, I'm so mindful, yeah, yeah. And that is not sati, yeah. And so that's when I understood what sati is, yeah. There are no kilesas. And if you go into samadhi, and if there are no kilesas, you know, when you are in samadhi, there are no kilesas, there's no thoughts about what is happening, and there's no memories, you know, that come up and compare things, yeah. That's what is sati. Yeah? And that's why I call it awareness. Awareness that, you know, is just aware, you know, but it doesn't classify things that are happening. Because then you become mindful, you know, then you become mindful of this thing. Yeah? Oh, your mind gets scattered.
This sati is like reflection, basically, the capacity to kind of, like, be aware of the fact that you're aware of something, basically.
No, it is awareness in itself, yeah? I mean, it is the knowing, yeah? And that's why I said, you know, I mean, observe the animals, you know, without even thinking about what they are doing. You don't have, you don't, when you observe the squirrels, you know, running up the tree, you don't have to think that they are running up the tree. You know it, yeah? And when they see fighting, you know, you see them fighting. You know it, yeah? You don't have to make concepts about what they are doing. So this is the knowingness. And the knowingness is universal, yeah? But at the moment, you know, this knowingness has an object, yeah? The object, you know, that is, you know, pulled in by the concentration, and that's what the knowingness is. Yeah, observing, yeah? But when you go into deep samadhi, there is only pure knowingness without object. Yeah?
But samadhi would have, for example, base of breath, right?
Of course.
And then...
Yeah,
then
you have the object. You have to have an anchor. Otherwise, you don't know where the mind goes. That's why we need the Buddha, or that's why we need the breath, yeah? To have an anchor. Yeah? That we know at every moment where the mind goes, yeah? So that we can pull it back.
This concentration on breath included also awareness about what is just a real concentration.
In the beginning, you just concentrate on the breath, but the stronger your knowing of the breath becomes, yeah? I mean, then you're not only there at the nostrils, but you feel the whole breath body, yeah? I mean, it is talked about in the Mahadipatthana Sutta, yeah? So, I mean, feeling the breath body, yeah? But you don't get to feel the breath body if you don't have this awareness, if you don't have the sati, yeah? And that is where most people go wrong, yeah? They just train concentration. But they don't train the sati. Because it is in the beginning, I don't want to know how the breath is, I just want to stay with the breath. Huh? I don't know if the breath is subtle, I don't know if the in-breath is longer, or the out-breath is longer, or if it is deep, or if it is shallow. Just the same, because we just, I mean, that is our usual thing. Staying with the repetition, okay, and then And then we get fooled by the nice feeling that comes up, and then we go to the feeling, and we don't really have an anchor. Yeah. So developing this knowingness is, if you don't know, in the beginning, just we put some labels on it. In-breath, out-breath, in-breath, out-breath, In-breath long, out-breath short, or out-breath long, in-breath short, Out-breath calm, Until we develop this knowingness and it becomes automatic. So then we don't have to use the label. If we can do it already, then we don't have to use the labels at all. But this is, you don't like to do it because of it. It's much nicer, just to sit, but this doesn't help us. Developing samadhi is developing the concentration, it's developing also the suffering. Most teachers in the West don't even know that there's a difference between concentration and sati. I think samadhi is concentration.
And then, as one's concentration develops, then, for example, there could be pleasant feeling.
Yes.
And so, you can just note pleasant feeling and then go back.
You can say pleasant feeling. In the beginning, you can use labels, to make you aware of the awareness. There's a pleasant feeling, and then you instantly go back. Because if you trust, if you see the pleasant feeling, then we go to it, And then after 5 minutes, there I go. After 2 minutes, it's gone. What happens if you say pleasant feeling and go back to the breath or go back to the Buddha, then the feeling becomes more and more intense. It can become so intense that it's actually dukkha, that it's actually dissatisfying, but it also disappears. And then it goes to something else, And we just know this thing, We just observe what is happening, It is like in artificial intelligence. You want to understand how the mind works, And now you want to understand how this construct that we call human, works. And we can only do that, when you go back in science, How did they come to the law of gravity? Observing. They didn't have any idea what is happening. They observed, And then they saw the apple, and then they looked at the feather, and looked at these things. And then, from then, they derived the law. But for us, it is worse. That's why there's hardly any science anymore in this world. Because people don't have time to observe anything. They have to write papers in the university. And they take other papers, or make studies, and then put something together. But they don't have the time. How did they observe, in the 18th century, Madame Curie, she was courageous, she observed the effect, And all these physicists, be it Einstein or be it, in the 1920s, about the atoms, the Lord Buddha said, 2,500 years ago, the smallest building block of the universe is the atom, And then they found it 1920.
So from samadhi, then what is the stage beyond samadhi? Now the mind is established in samadhi.
Then you go to investigate. You investigate the five groups that you attach to. That is rupa, vedana, sanya, sankhana, vijnana. And the one that you attach to most is the body. You're constantly afraid of the body. You're afraid of the pain of the body, you're afraid to die, of the death of the body, and so on. And all your greed and hate is always in connection with the body. You want something for the body, you're cold, you want something warm. You're warm, you want something cool. It's always connected to the body.
Money for
buying things,
Yeah.
You don't want to, it's It's useless, you know. Yeah? Piece of paper if you can't do anything. But our dreams, you know, what we can do with all this money, you know? Yeah? That's also for the body.
Yeah.
It's always connected. Greed and hate are connected to the body. So that's why when you investigate the body completely, then you're not reborn anymore.
Then it's like destruction of the five aggregates, or destruction of attachment to them, or dissolution.
Only destruction of the body. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. The anagami, you know, the anagami, it still has, you know, the higher fetters, you know, to cut off. Yeah. And the fourth and the fifth fetter is greed and hate. And that is connected to the body. So whoever finished the body investigation will not come back, neither in the heavenly worlds, nor in the lower worlds, nor in the human world. He just will fall up the ladder.
So through the body investigation, detachment comes, and insight that none of this is mine, and then so there's a letting go. And
yes, But this body investigation has to be taken place not in our brain.
Yeah.
It has to take place in our heart. Yeah? Because our brain looks out there, you know what is there, this is not my body, but if somebody hits you, oh, you know, you stupid. Yeah? Yeah? We can fantasize, now it's not our body, but something happens, you know, we get sick, and then we instantly, you know, yeah? No. The separation has to be done in the heart. We have to show them. Yeah? We have to show the heart that the body is something, you know, that is not worthwhile having. And it doesn't give us any sukha. Yeah? Hey!
There's,
So, you can go. So there's...
Particularly in the Thai tradition, there's this talking of the heart versus, you know, traditionally think of the mind as aware. There's always knowing in the heart versus...
The heart and the mind in Thai is the same word.
Okay.
Yeah. It's called chit. Yeah. I mean, if they want to be more specific about the... It's not so, you know, about the essence of the chitta, yeah? Then they say chit, yeah? But they're always in combination. Chit-chai is the mind and the heart together. Yeah? Because they don't separate it like we do in the world. Yeah? It goes together.
Mm.
Yeah? I mean, to separate it out, we don't see, you know, the connection between the mind and the heart. Yeah? The heart, you know, is more the emotional thing, yeah? And the mind is more the rationalization of what is happening, yeah? But it all, you know, comes from the heart, yeah, and from the chitta, you know, from the chitta, yeah. The chitta is the one that goes to the next life, yeah? Together with its emotion, together with its mind, of course, yeah. Because they are part. Yeah? But the essence of the chitta, yeah, is the essence of every being, yeah? The same essence, yeah. That's why I call, you know, the chitta, it's a diamond, yeah. And every person has a different diamond. Yeah, but the essence of the diamond is always the same.
There seems to be a suggestion that there's like the individual chitta, but there's consciousness that goes beyond the individual chitta that's like...
Consciousness is part of the chitta.
So there's no talk, for example, of Chan Mahabhua, of something like... In the Indian philosophy, it's like the one consciousness.
No, no, no. Consciousness is one of the groups. It's the last group that you get, yeah? It's the last group, yeah? Rupa, yeah? It's the body. Vedana is feeling. Yeah? That's feeling, bodily feeling and mental feeling, yeah? Then it is memory, association. It's the third group, yeah? The fourth group is thought formations, yeah? I mean, short thought formations. Otherwise, you know, if they are longer, they are always connected with memory. And the fifth one is consciousness. Consciousness is just knowing something has come into the sense of contact. Yeah? You don't know yet what it is, because yeah, that's what you can explore, you know. And that is the beauty of meditation. You can see whatever is happening. Yeah? I mean, we like to be, you know, physicists, you know, scientists, you know, and study this and this. Yeah? Now we are studying our own being. Yeah? We see how things are. Yeah? So there's a consciousness, you know, some sense data coming in. Yeah? Then the memory is trying to figure out what kind of sense data it is. Yeah? If it gets, normally it gets a correct match. But if it is an unfamiliar sound or unfamiliar sight, it gets a mismatch. And you can see that. But we are not interested. We're not interested about it. We don't want to know how this thing is working, we just want to use it, yeah? Just like an airplane, show me how to use it, I just want to fly. Yeah? But how the airplane, how the machinery, all these parts of the airplane are working, we are not interested. Yeah? And now it is the time to get interested, to see. There is no universal consciousness, but there's a universal citta. Yeah? And the citta, the universal citta or the free citta, is the future and the past in one spot. Yeah? It is one pointedness. And if you want to know what it is, go deep into samadhi until everything disappears. Then you know it. And that's a preview of nibbana. It's also called nibbana. But it's difficult, yeah? Because sometimes fear comes up, yeah? I'm disappear, you know? Yeah? Whatever can disappear, let it disappear. And see what is left. Yeah? Understand?
Is there something like the emptying out of consciousness? Because I've had this experience in meditation where there's concentration has been strong enough and it seems like it triggers a kind of, it's as if the storehouse of memory starts like being released from the body mind.
Yeah,
like
but
sankharas being just like flooding out and just dissolving. And
yes, of course, yeah. I mean, that means, you know, it just, you go one level. I mean, samadhi has a beginning level, you know, and it slowly goes, you know, until the deep samadhi, you know, that is the step where you actually go into the void, yeah? Or into preview of nibbana, whatever you want to call it, yeah? Mm. And before that, you know, I mean, everything, yeah? I mean, when you go into samadhi, you know, in the beginning you're still here, yeah? I mean, there are no thoughts, there are no memories, but you're still here, you know, you still feel. And then the more concentrated you get, the less, yeah? I mean, sometimes, you know, it even happens, you know, that you're so concentrated that the body does not get the information how the position of the body is, yeah? So you get shocked because you think your head is on the floor or you lie down like this, you know? You open your eyes and you still sit, yeah? Because the body needs to go around and gets all the information from the different sensors, yeah? Just like in AI, you know, with a robot. Yeah, if it doesn't get the correct sensor information, it gets the wrong, correct misinformation, yeah? So, I mean, of course it gets rid of it because the concentration on the word Buddha or on the breath, yeah? I mean, stops all the other interaction of the citta, yeah? Mm-hmm. Because the citta is the driver of this body, yeah? It is so powerful we cannot even imagine it, yeah? Mm-hmm. So powerful, you know, it takes control of the whole body, you know? Just for the body movement, how much is going on in this, yeah? You see it, you know, when you do walking meditation, I mean, it's so much easier to concentrate the mind, you know, onto the Buddha or on the breath, while in contrast to when you do sitting meditation, because then you have to fully concentrate, yeah, the citta. Yeah? But it's still doing the things, you know, I mean, seeing the position of the body, yeah. But when you go deeper, you know, I mean, even this, the citta doesn't have time, you know, to go around and look for the different position. So it gives you a misinformation, and then it wakes you up, and then you open your eyes, and you say, well, what happened? Yeah? Mm-hmm. Yeah? And then you go even deeper, you know, until you don't feel anything, until you see anything, and there's only one little spot there, yeah? Before you actually, you know, dive into one knowingness, yeah? Or one pointedness. Yeah? Okay, so think these things, all things, you know, I mean, depending on the characters, all sort of things can happen. Okay? So don't even worry about it, just stick with your object. Okay? It's enough for today. Yeah.
I want to offer a donation.
Yeah, just put it
just
in
there.
Yeah, just okay. Put it in. I'm already tired, yeah? So what?
I can come back tomorrow.
No, yeah. Well, what is it?
I want to know, when you talk about not defending yourself.
Yeah.
When you answer a question, I always feel like it's a rationalization, and that's self and rationalization.
Come a little bit closer. Yes, just stick around. You can stick around, yeah. There's no secrets.
Like when you ask me, why do you smile? Like,
yeah.
To answer that question, I have to kick in rationalization, like to rationalize an emotion. And that feels like a self thing.
Yes. I mean, how do you know? I mean, you just go, you know, and to see what has happened. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But to explain it, that's like self, the reasoning.
No, there's no reasoning. I mean, that is the difference between knowing and mindful. I mean, before you smile, you know why you smile.
Yeah. But then to explain it to you, I feel like it's self.
No. If you just say, you know, that's why I smile, you know, I mean, yeah. There's
like
no self.
If the brain kicks in, then there's the self involved. If it's just the heart, there's no self. But once the
No, not necessarily true. Yeah. You just explain something, you just explain something, you know, that is, you know, that's what you know, and you put it into words, that there's no self in it. But if you want to make something out of it, yeah, I mean, it's easy that the self creates it.
Yeah, if you're like manipulating
it. Yes, yeah. If you manipulate it, then the self comes in, yeah. But if you just say, you know, straight out, you know, that's why, yeah. Why did you smile, huh?
To me, it feels like reasons are a self, but emotion is not self.
No. All these things, thought is not self, memory is not self, yeah? It's just that you try to make it self because you identify with it.
Identify with thinking,
yeah. Cogito ergo sum, yeah? You never had Latin? What are the Australians? Canadians as well, they never have Latin?
No, we didn't have Latin. But in Germany, you would have Latin, I imagine.
Of course.
Yeah.
Latin, Greek, and so on.
I think therefore I am. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, that I know.
Cogito ergo sum. Yeah. I think therefore I am. Yeah. If I don't think, I don't exist. Yeah.
Eckhart Tolle said this is one of the greatest rational flaws in Western philosophy. I think that being depends on thought, that existence depends on thought. I think therefore I am.
Yeah, I mean, Descartes, you know, I mean, he mechanized, you know. I mean, there was a part, you know, whenever there's a philosophy, there's a good part, yeah, and there's a bad part, yeah. Yeah? Because it's never the truth, yeah. Whenever you speak something, you know, in our language, you know, there's a positive and there's a negative, yeah? And whatever people make out of it, yeah? I mean, his things explained a lot, yeah? I mean, just like Freud, yeah? I mean, he explained a lot. And some of it is, you know, it is completely in concordance.
In concordance,
you know, with what is Buddha's teaching, yeah. But some of it goes beyond it, you know, it has nothing to do with it, yeah. And the same thing with Descartes, yeah. But it made, well, we see it, you know, when we research it, you know, Descartes, you know, I mean, he really separates emotion from emotions, you know. I mean, he made it really a mechanized world, and that was the beginning of industrialization. Yeah? So he's a father, you know. at least to my understanding, he was one of the fathers of mechanization, yeah? Because he described it, yeah? But, you know, there's fault with it, you know, whatever, yeah? Doesn't really matter. No, you know, if you just express, you know, what you felt or what you knew, you know, I mean, there's no I in it, there's no self, and there's no self-defense. Mm-hmm. Defending is when I, you know, when I attack you, yeah? And say, you know, you're not worth a thing, you know, I mean, or you're bad, you know, I mean, and then you say, no, I'm not bad, yeah? That is defending. Yeah? But expressing what you feel or what you knew, you know, that has nothing to do with self. Self-view.
Because I don't spend a lot of time communicating, it feels like a big switch in gears between just being with, you know, and then to switch into...
Yeah, but you do it.
I do it, but it's just, if I feel more of a disconnect these days. It felt...
Then see where the problem is, yeah? Have a look. Because there shouldn't be a disconnect.
Like, I just want to be able you to feel it rather than me have to put it into words.
There's a problem. Okay. There's a problem, you know, and it is, maybe I'm wrong, but it is more on the woman's side. They are more want to feel things, you know, and men want more to rationalize things.
Yeah, that's one thing I notice in my practice as well. I want to feel a certain way, like,
We want to know what is going on. We neither want to feel, nor do we want to rationalize. Yeah? And then, you know, if you detach from your feelings, you know, I mean, yeah, then you will see, you know, the knowingness is different than feeling. You cannot feel the knowingness. Yeah? It is one of the proofs, yeah? Yeah? And the knowingness is not one of the proofs. Yeah? So the knowingness knows the feeling, yeah? It knows the thoughts, it knows the memories, it knows the body, yeah? And it knows consciousness, yeah? But it's neither of these, yeah?
And it knows whether it feels good or nice.
But it is more on the woman's side, you know. I mean, to be more with their feelings, you know, more, yeah. And it is more on the manly side, you know, to more with their rationalization.
I would say I started out with more with the rationalization. Now I've moved into feeling territory.
Yeah, so let's get rid of both of the things. Okay.